Good Saturday morning. Welcome into another edition of Public Perspectives here on AM 1340 KXCO. Ray Michaels with a couple of special guests this morning. Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, everyone. Nick Tietzort, Emergency Management Director for Audrain County.
And your new Assistant Director?
I am Judah Paniawa.
Judah, welcome aboard. Nick, we've heard from before. It is National Preparedness Month. That's what September is. So what are some of the main topics this year?
All right, so the main topic that we're going over at the moment with the general public is the idea of 72 on you, which is when a disaster first occurs, that first 72 hours is very possible that emergency services may not reach you. So you should have a go-ready pack or some kind of kit that will last you and your family those first 72 hours.
So what would you recommend being in that kit?
So FEMA, on their website, ready.gov/kit, they list out everything that you'd be needing in your kits. Of course, everyone knows the basic things like extra batteries, flashlight, food, water.
Radio.
And a radio, exactly. But there may be some things that are a bit more niche in your family, like medication, special ID cards, or even something like a can opener that you might forget. You might bring some cans, but not a can opener, and now you can't use that food.
Silverware or some type of eating utensil. I would think would be useful in there.
Exactly.
Are some of these things available at, say, an Army Navy surplus store?
Yes, a lot of them would be available there. I know that the Red Cross also has that as well. But okay. You could build your own even just from going to shop at Walmart.
All right. Now, you know, fall is coming in the next few days. Winter can't be too far behind, unfortunately. It is 2020. We have no idea what winter is going to bring this year. What steps should listeners take to be prepared for sudden changes in weather?
Sudden changes in weather are something that we as Missourians know very well. And I love the old adage that, you know, all you have to do is wait till the afternoon and the weather will change. And that's almost absolutely true. But it's nice to prepare, especially as we're changing from now summer to fall and then fall to winter, by really paying attention to your vehicle and the air that's in your tires, making sure that you have proper pressure. As winter approaches and we have these temperature drops and especially extreme drops between day and night, that's going to affect the air pressure in your tires, and you want to make sure that you have those properly filled so that not only you're getting the best gas mileage you can get, but also you're not having any blowouts in your tires. I would also encourage people, as we do have that program, the first 72's on you, is to look at developing some sort of car kit and have a kit available in your car. Make sure to wash those blankets. If you have blankets in your car for winter weather, wash those blankets, get them prepared so that if you do happen to break down, or if you have young children or other people in your car with you, you know, you still have a way to stay warm if your car is disabled. Check the batteries so that I have these little sticks that are battery sticks so you can recharge your phone and some of your devices. And that's something that I think can easily be put into a car kit. They're very small. They usually only charge your cell phone about a quarter or half to its battery life. If you're very lucky, it'll charge it full depending on what type of battery charger you have. But having those available so that just in case you completely run out of battery life, you still have the ability to charge up your phone and get help on the way.
You know, I was doing a little shopping, planning a trip that ended up not happening, but I picked up fairly cheaply a solar battery charge that I was planning on using to charge my phone while I was traveling, and that could be something thrown in to either kit very easily.
Absolutely, and those are so small now that, I mean, they're so portable. So, yeah, that's a wonderful suggestion. I've also seen, you know, for like camping and other events where they have those, they almost look like turbines that you put, I don't know if I'm saying that right, turbines that you put into the water, and the water turns it to then generate power. So, I mean, there's so many good options out there that can also use wind. So if you were to put it on top of your car or something and you have wind moving, of course, in winter weather, I would be very cautious of anything that might draw moisture. Changing from your car temperature to the outside might block a turbine or something like that and then cause that not to work. But solar energy is not the same. You know, that actually would work better if you get it out of your vehicle and put it out into the light. So that's a great suggestion.
You know, in years past, you've had preparedness expos. Is that going to go on this year because of COVID, or are you planning on teaching any classes or anything like that?
We just had our meeting for our disaster expo, and the decision was made late last month to postpone the expo so that we can focus on having our live event and not try to have a virtual option or some of the other options where maybe drive up. Those options, I think, would take away from the ability for us to open up our emergency service vehicles and then talk face-to-face with people about the services we provide. And so we have decided to postpone it. We're looking at a spring date, possibly in March. March is the beginning of our severe weather season, and so it would be a good way to kind of merge the two. Even though it's a preparedness expo, it also gives us the ability to talk about severe weather and pretty much the same topics we're talking about here, developing a kit and being prepared if we were to have severe weather or tornado.
I say it would work no matter what you're preparing for. You could do that through the Disaster Preparedness Expo.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're not really losing any time here. I've tried to explain to folks that, you know, the best part of this is it actually gives us more time to not only prepare, but make sure we get everything done correctly. We'll have a Facebook page coming out soon. We'll be able to post the event on that Facebook page and try to get some more people interested. Our plan is to maybe incorporate some short videos of our emergency service providers, you know, looking through their equipment and talking about a tip to provide to people, what they recommend that are more geared toward their industry. So, I gave an example earlier in our group about fire and, you know, making sure that, you know, we talk to kids about not trying to hide during a fire when they hear a loud alarm noise, but to, you know, hear that noise and then know what their evacuation plan is to get out of their homes and things like that, that I think is important. You know, we'd like to have those messages put out and then have the web page, Facebook page available so that people know when our event is and are able to come to it because it isn't at its usual time.
Sure. Now, do you have any tips or anything on the Emergency Management Facebook page that already exists or on the website now for Preparedness Month?
For Preparedness Month, we posted some things for like tornadoes. Recently, we posted something with the kit, and we're going to be posting things up as time goes on. But it is still early September, so I believe we only have like two, maybe three posts on our Facebook currently.
And what is the Facebook page and website for people to look at?
It's just Audrin County Emergency Management Agency.
Judah, tell us your story.
So obviously, my name is Judah Panyawa, as you had mentioned before. I was born and raised in L.A., and the really big city over there in Los Angeles. I grew up there until I was about 16 years old. Then we ended up moving up to NorCal. I was in Lodi, then Stockton for a year. Then I went to college. The college that I went to was in Napa Valley. It's Pacific Union College.
Was there wine tasting at that college?
No, there was no wine tasting in that college. It was a private Christian college, so
yeah. Okay.
They did not have those types of stuff. Well, according to the rule book, they didn't have that type of stuff. Although some students
bent the rules.
Made sure they had some freedom.
Okay. Fair enough.
The main reason why I went to that college is for three reasons. One, it is the only college in California that offered the emergency management degree at the bachelor level. The second reason was that they had a fire academy that they linked in with the emergency management degree, that many of the students go over there and volunteer. And my first idea was to become a firefighter. So I was like, all right, so going to that college would give me that opportunity. As well as I received a $36,000 scholarship to that school, which helped a lot, put it that way. So I went there. After my first year, I became an EMT. My second year, I became a firefighter. So I was a volunteer fireman with Angwin Volunteer Fire Department for 2 years. And I was on an ambulance company called Angwin Community Ambulance for 3 years. Well, I was actually only with them for about a year and a half because I think in February 2019, the company went under. But I was still on EMT with the fire department because I was a fireman at that point. So I was still responding and going on calls. Back my freshman year is when the campfire occurred in NorCal. The campfire, the nuns, and the Atlas. During that time, many of my friends were responding to the fire. They were there in wildland, doing their wildland thing. Unfortunately for me and one of my new friends, Chris Klein, is that we were both only EMTs. We were not firefighters at that point. And the school said, all right, we're going to close for a week because the air is too smoky. You can't breathe here. So everyone left, except for a handful of people. The students that were firefighters and essential faculty and some other students that wanted to stay. Him and I decided we're going to help our community. We're going to be here and we're going to stay. So we ended up moving to Napa Community College where they had an evacuation center. And we were there for about a week just helping people in and out. Honestly, I did a lot of translating in that job because I'm bilingual. I speak both English and Spanish. And many people that had to leave didn't have a place to go. Many of them were only spoke Spanish or had very little English. So much of my time was just staying up all day just translating for the doctors and the nurses who were there volunteering their time. That was a really wild experience that I had. But for firefighting over in wildland fire, I responded to the Snell fire. Luckily for me, I was not digging trenches or spraying water. I was on a water tender. So I was just hauling water the whole time. Just going to the nearest place to get water, basically drinking it up, and then just sending it to the people who are going to be shooting the fire. COVID ended up hitting, of course, early on. And California got hit a little bit earlier, more January, February. So when that happened, our school closed and we had to do virtual learning, which was a fun experience to have at the very end of my college experience. So instead of, you know, having an actual graduation, it was all virtual, which was fantastic. But during that time, I was halfway through actually creating a new degree for my college. It's currently still under revision, but we're going to end up making a second emergency management program where it's more focused on mitigation and planning, using historical data in order to use statistical analysis in order to find out what vulnerabilities does your area have in order to more accurately pinpoint what we need to plan for, what we need to exercise for. Like I said before, it's still under revision, and if it does pass, it should be up in 2022, I believe.
Very good. Now, how does Audrain County compare to Northern California?
So the college that I went to in Napa Valley was in a rural area. Angwin itself, which was the town that the school was in, only had about 10,000 people. The nearest large city was about 40 minutes away. So it's very similar to here, at least in Mexico and in Audrain County in general. It's still a very rural town. The main difference is, of course, this is Missouri, there is California. They grew grapes, and over here we grow corn and soybeans. But overall, the experience is rather similar to that rural feel to it. Of course, the culture is a little bit different, but I've only been here for like less than a month, so I'm still adapting to everything.
It'll grow on you.
But yeah, I definitely do like it here, for sure.
But what are the challenges facing you as the new assistant director for the Emergency Management Agency?
Memorizing names.
That's true.
That is tough.
There's a lot of people doing a lot of things at the local level, at the state level, and... in different counties that their job position was like, hey, I know what you do, but I don't know your name. So whenever we're in meetings and I only see names, I'm just like, Who are you again?
I forgot
what
nothing.
You do. So that's one of the challenges that I'm seeing, at least currently, is just trying to figure out who everybody is and how everybody connects together.
Nick, let's talk just a minute about COVID-19. It's continuing to be a problem in the county, so are our resources being stretched at all?
You know, COVID has really tested our plans and really tested the agencies, not just in Audrain County, but at the state level. And I know that we're fortunate that we still have shipments that are coming in through SEMA and being delivered through the county through our fire liaisons. So that is being delivered through the Little Dixie to Chief Albus. And so he's getting those and dispersing those through the county. We're still continuing to buy PPE. The masks that we have and some that we were able to purchase, we're trying to make sure that we have enough so that if we get a resurgence, especially here in the winter, that we're able to still have some supply for emergency means. And then trying to locate supply and give those supply lines to our local responders and to our local agencies, healthcare facilities and things like that, that typically their supply lines are pretty solid, but it has been recently where some of those are stretched and the supplies are short. We're lucky enough that I think nationally we've caught up, and so now there's a lot more supply lines that are available, and I think that the caution that we have to take now is to make sure that we don't look at suppliers that are fly-by-night suppliers and try to sell us things that are packaged in a way that would be N95, but the actual product is not. The state got into some issues when they trusted a supplier earlier in the year, and I think there are still suppliers out there that are having those
trying to make a quick buck.
Absolutely, absolutely. And still trying to get out there and get everyone involved in that. I think we have supply lines that are staying steady. There's always need, but I think for now, we're at a point now where it's loosened enough so we can get the supplies we need in a quick time versus waiting weeks or months. My example is I ordered N95 masks that were ordered through a 3M distributor, and that 3M distributor, still those masks are not available, but the order is in, right? So whenever that order becomes available, I'll then get an invoice. But I received a call from them a couple months ago, and they said, hey, we don't have the mask you wanted, but we have another mask that is a 3M product. It's N95 rated, would you like that? And so, of course, we ordered several hundred of those to make sure that we could have our supply in the meantime to then get the supply we had ordered. So, I think those stories are not unique to Audrain County. I think those are, stories you would hear throughout the entire region, Region F, and really through the state of Missouri as well. The good thing about the state of Missouri is they've opened up the portal, it's a Google store, Google shop, something. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's a, they don't verify the products, but it's brought in so that the state can then have a way to weed out companies that are not good companies, because if anyone fails to provide service or it's, bad service or whatever, then they get put on a, do not buy list. Similar to how we would do with contract stuff through the state, when supplier and contracts don't meet up to the contract of the state. And then, we're able to kind of weed out those companies that are on that list that are on the do not buy because of whatever the issue is.
Now, I know we're trying to kind of stockpile and get a little bit ahead. Is that stockpile in one central location or is it spread throughout the county?
It kind of goes in levels. So emergency management, my function and what we're trying to collect, I think, is just for, more emergency supply, where you'll have other agencies throughout the county that, and stockpile with the amount of supplies we're getting is is really a reach. it's more like a pile. But other agencies throughout the county, you know, have supplies that might be tailored more towards medical, where we might be tailored more towards emergency service. And that doesn't mean that we weren't available to share supplies with medical entities, because we have. But we also want to make sure that, you know, our law, our fire, our EMS are supplied, so that when they have to transport, arrest, or go to the burning house of someone who is known to have COVID, or you know, family members or whatever who are affected in that residence, you know, that they can have the proper PPE as well. So I would say yes, but maybe not stockpile.
But for both of you, and you can both answer, you want to, it doesn't matter to me, but now that we've had an outbreak in a long-term care facility, has that changed or allowed you to tweak response protocols, or are the plans that are currently in place working as they should?
So the plans that were in place haven't been changed. What we were able to do as emergency management is hear the need from the facility, and then we were able to make objectives to then fill that need. So, you know, major objectives being staffing, right? Making sure that the staffing is at a level that provides the care that those people need, not only on the COVID wing, but also within the facility itself. And so we're really using this as a template, so that if other facilities throughout the county have those types of needs with PPE and staffing, that we're able to then come in and know who to contact within the state, who to contact locally, and then resources that we've actually drawn from outside of the county. Some resources that I don't know have how much play they've had thus far, but definitely, you know, like nursing students and other resources like EMTs. That's something that has been allowed through these facilities that normally would only be as a you know, clinical side of things to develop hours, or you know, even in the EMT side, clinical to develop hours. But they're able to then come into these facilities and offer a huge hand to them. Some of the things you don't think of, it's not only patient care, but it's also day-to-day activities. You know, making sure linens are clean, right? Making sure that rooms and floors are clean. You know, trying to keep that kind of a sterile environment is difficult when you're losing staff. And so,
and dietary requirements, dietary
absolutely
staff.
You need folks to hand out meals. You know, I mean, just because you have the ability to cook them doesn't mean you have the ability to get them out in a proper time. And so, yeah, absolutely, it's things like that that you know, you really have to look at as a whole, especially when you go into a crisis. And and I hope we've done everything we can to help them out, but I know we're going to use this as a way to help other facilities if they have these problems in the future.
Very good. That's going to wrap up this edition of Public Perspectives for this Saturday morning. Thanks to both of you for getting out and joining us on a Saturday morning once again. Judah Panawa, good to meet you. And Nick Tietzort, we'll be talking again soon, I am sure. Public Perspectives, AM 1340, KXCO.